This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Julian Ng. Now, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Liu Wei-kyung, who's the de facto law minister, has said there is no need to institute Prime Minister's question time at this stage because he said Dr. Mahathir Mohamad already addresses questions twice a week during a minister's question time.
So taking a look at what the manifesto says, which is on page 45, if you're interested, every week 30 minutes will be allocated for Prime Minister's question in the Dewan Rakyat. This is nothing new. It is also a practice, of course, in the UK, Australia and so forth.
So the decision to not have a PM's question time has been met with some disappointment, both within Parliament as well as from civil society. So joining us in the studios this morning to discuss this issue and for a broader look at the political landscape, we have Wong Chen, the MP for Subang and member of Parti Keadilan Rakyat, today in studio with us. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
So Wong Chen, you've expressed disappointment over the decision to not have a Prime Minister's question time. Why isn't the Minister's question time adequate then?
The minister's question time doesn't guarantee the prime minister's involvement in answering any question, and that's a system that we've used for the last 2 years under the old administration. So for us, the prime minister really has to be more accountable to the public because in Malaysian democracy he has superpowers, extraordinary powers. So prime minister question time is a supplement to accountability on his part.
And can you give us some details as to how, if this was implemented, how it would work? Would it be, how long would it be, 10 minutes and 20 minutes? And what kind of follow-up action will the questions hold?
Okay, so generally, Prime Minister question time should be about 30 minutes for every week that Parliament is sitting. It could be on a Thursday, you know, or Wednesday. Generally, the opposition leader gets 6 questions. That's the UK model. So, because the Prime Minister doesn't have a select committee looking after his portfolio, so to speak. So it's very important that he at least allocates that 30 minutes a week to answer questions. So I think that's how the format should be. And I think that's what we understood in the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto team.
But would this be an easy pledge to fulfill in actuality, taking into account our current parliamentary demographics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is just about political will. To amend this, you need to amend the standing orders. So under Order 24A, that's the minister question time. You just need to make a Order 24B. I mean, that's just a motion being tabled by members of parliament, needs a 51% approval. Then they send it back to the standing order committee, and then they will then go through the process and implement it.
Why do you think that either the Prime Minister or people who are speaking on his behalf has turned back, backpedaled on this promise in the manifesto?
Well, I think we were talking about it in the last sitting, which was in March. You know, so we had high expectation for July. I mean, if it doesn't happen now, I don't think it's called backpedaling, so to speak. It's just very disappointing after a year and a bit that we haven't done this basic one. It requires a simple vote, a simple majority vote. I have no idea why, but you know, if we can't get it done in July, then we expect latest in the October budget sitting.
Mm-hmm. And earlier on in the year, Wong Chen, I also spoke to you about the parliamentary select committee, and I'm sure that you would have the view that something like the Prime Minister's question time is part of the institution together with the PSCs for check and balances in the country. And recently, we also saw a lot of grouses about Latifah Koya's appointment not going through the PSC for appointments. What do you think is the state of institutional reforms in our country so far?
It has been, you know, unfortunately a bit slow, and for many of the backbenchers, we're a bit anxious because I think the public is demanding institutional reforms. Now, the Prime Minister's question time specifically is very important because, as I said earlier, there is no PSC on the Prime Minister. In the UK, they have a liaison committee that meets the Prime Minister maybe once every quarter. So, in fact, the Prime Minister moves about in Parliament almost unaccountable to Parliament. So PMQ is so important in that respect that it is not a grilling. It is still there for him to answer questions, to compel him to answer questions and to explain on many issues, whether it's national automotive policy, because he seems to cut across every policy in town.
Now, you mentioned earlier, Wang Chen, that this kind of a reform would require a 51% approval in order to push it through. So does this actually have a bipartisan support within the Dewan Rakyat? So is it really just a matter of Pakatan Harapan not wanting to push it through?
Well, you're right. 51%. We have more than 51%. I think we have, at latest count, close to about 60-something, 61, 62. So, you know, you can be a third-year law student and draft the amendments we need to do, right? All you really need is the will to do it. So the Prime Minister has this prerogative because he runs the government and only they can table a motion. We can try to table a private member's motion on this issue, but you will never see the light of day. That's just the way it is. So, yeah, it is a political will question.
Would it be fair to say that the opposition would definitely vote for this because they are the ones who would want to question the Prime Minister? And this would eventually, if it was put to the vote, would become a landslide decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a single opposition member that doesn't want this. Yeah, so, and a lot of backbenchers do want it. But again, as I say, the process is in the hands of the cabinet or the government.
So it really does come down to political will. But just also taking a look at the wider political landscape that we're seeing here in Malaysia, Wong Chen, the most recent news we've had today is that the motion to lower the voting age from 21 to 18 will be tabled in the July parliamentary sitting. That's next month. So what are your thoughts on that motion?
Well, I think, I think that's going to add somewhere around 400,000 to 500,000 new voters. So that's a good thing because in terms of participation of participatory democracy. But I really need to know, and I think the government should do a survey, how many 18-year-olds actually know about the process of lawmaking or whether they're really interested in politics or not. Otherwise, what you might have is a lot of very good-looking MPs being elected into office. not to make fun of it.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, I don't know, but I think participatory democracy requires some knowledge on the population age of the 18 years old. So I would hold it back a bit until maybe October and do a nationwide survey first and see what the reaction is like.
So this is interesting because it sounds that you are pretty mixed about this to allow the 18-year-olds to vote. And wouldn't this synchronize the policies because you're in the process of also abolishing the ban on university students to participate in politics as well? It really is testament to a policy of giving power back to the young, right?
No, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. But, you know, is the young really fully knowledgeable about the constitution, the process? So if we pass this in July, and I don't really object to it, I just want to know what is the level of capacity and knowledge of these youth that will be voting, because they will make a tremendous impact mm-hmm. on the coming election. Many of these seats are won on marginal percentages. So adding another 400,000 to 500,000 new voters can have really significant political impact. And what you want is that impact to be real and to be based on informed knowledge. So if they pass this in July, I would like to see immediately the education system, the curriculum being revamped slightly, at least, 16-year-olds can prepare themselves to mm-hmm. vote in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yes, because this cannot be passed in a vacuum, essentially. You have to prepare these 18-year-olds for participation in a wider political system.
Yeah, absolutely. And the University Act that they amended still has some restriction because it requires the dean's approval. So that bit needs to be re-amended as well. So, the process is not as simple as just passing a bill, and I'm sure everybody is going to support it. Mm-hmm. It's just that I would like to know a bit more data and some commitment by government on building knowledge.
Yeah, but just going back, turning the attention back to the Prime Minister, a lot of comments from the Prime Minister about his handing over of the reins to Anwar Ibrahim. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, it may seem like it's his prerogative, but on this very, very important subject matter, it's really up to Pakatan Harapan leaders. So he's given that not beyond 3 years, so it's between 2 to 3 years. We have to look at it objectively and say, if the new Prime Minister comes in, how long does he need to set his own style and to arrange the cabinet and the government in preparation for coming election? The faster he hands over, then it gives more time for the new Prime Minister to come in to do something and prepare us for the election. So at the back of everybody's mind, most MPs, is their own survivability. You know, they want to be re-elected, right?
Yeah.
So they understand that to give a bit more time to the new PM is probably the best thing to do.
So what in your mind would make a make for a reasonable time frame in order to hand over power to Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim? And perhaps what kind of preparation would be needed in the interim? Because in Singapore, for example, the successor of the Prime Minister usually holds a key ministerial position in order to ensure that good transition. And while Dato' Sri Anwar has experience in government, that was 20 years ago. So what would you think would be necessary to prepare and smoothen that transition?
He definitely needs to come into cabinet and maybe not as DPM, maybe, but a senior position, you know. So he needs to come in and he needs to stabilize himself and understand and reconnect with the civil servants and also with his colleagues, the ministers there. So that has to come in early. And I think in terms of time frame, you know, maybe July 2020 is a good time to hand over, because then he'll be going to parliament in July. So there'll be a good transition period.
Now, very quickly, Wong Chen, PKR seems quite split between an Anwar and an Azmin Ali camp. So give us a sense of how this is affecting the morale within the party and whose camp are you in?
Well, I'm with, Anwar, I suppose. but more specifically with Rafizi, of course. He's been an old dear friend of mine and we worked a lot on policy making. So I'm more the technocrat. The technocrats tend to be on the other side. I think that the party has decided not to talk so much about the issues. But it is a concern. We want to get down to it, but we at the same time we want to let the police to do their job. I think that's important. The legal thing has to go on.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Wong Chen. We've been speaking with Wong Chen, MP for Subang and member of Parti Keadilan Rakyat. We're coming up on the 8 o'clock news, and after that, the Breakfast Grill, where Khoo Chuang speaks with Cherian Varghese, regional managing director and vice president of ASEAN Oracle and Sage. Be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.